As we press ever deeply into our theological basis as a community for taking part in the sanctuary movement, we find ourselves focusing today on perhaps the most complicated yet most straightforward aspect of the movement: offering hospitality and providing metaphorical sanctuary in our literal sanctuary to someone who has reason to believe their potential detainment could result in their unjust and unnecessary deportation. This is a decision we have made as a community in direct resistance to dangerous rhetoric and policy shifts at the national level regarding the treatment of immigrant lives in this country. And we hear in Matthew's gospel this morning, in one place among many, as straightforward a call to sanctuary as there is: whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. I could fairly well end the sermon right there. Jesus says to us, whoever welcomes you welcomes me. In other words, if someone is in need of welcome, if someone is in need of hospitality, if someone is in need of a cup of cold water and you offer it, you might as well have offered those things to God. You welcome the very living God when you welcome someone in need of a soft place to land from a hard world. But guess what? I won't end the sermon there. Surprise, surprise. Because this morning we also have a pesky lesson from the Hebrew scriptures. You know that psychological thriller about Abraham and Isaac? If you've grown up in church, you've probably heard once or twice that this story is a precursor to Jesus' sacrifice on the cross, that this story reminds us that we are supposed to offer whatever sacrifice is necessary to set God's feasting table, that we are called to demonstrate obedience, to feed God whatever God asks of us. And if you haven't grown up in church, you can totally think this story is House of Cards creepy. Isaac, you read it very creepily. I appreciate that. Think about it. Abraham takes his son Isaac on a morning stroll to offer a ritual sacrifice, wink, wink, only to watch in horror as Isaac finds out, surprise, surprise, that he is the ritual sacrifice. Every time I hear Isaac innocently say to Abraham, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? I cringe with horror. This moment begs some pretty serious, pretty disturbing questions about God. Did God demand this sacrifice? If a sacrifice is essentially meant to be a feast for God, this story presses us to ask, does God's feast require blood? Does God's table demand the destruction of human life for its fulfillment? Does the universe require the destruction of human life for its fulfillment? Is God a bloodthirsty tyrant feasting on the suffering of others? Or is God a tired traveler seeking water and rest and hospitality from the dangers of the world? I suppose I don't get to say if God is entirely one or the other, but here's what I will say on this Eve's Eve of our nation's birthday. It sure is convenient theologically for an empire or nation state to espouse a God who isn't bothered by sacrifice at the cost of human lives. It sure is convenient to paint a picture of a universe that requires that some of us win and some of us lose in order to balance the scales of law and order. It sure is convenient to think of God gorging off of a table filled with the sacrifices of the most vulnerable for the sake of greater prosperity and possibility. So what if 22 million people lose their health care coverage and face the peril of choosing between their basic health and bankruptcy? That's the price of freedom. We all make sacrifices to set a good table for God. So what if Black lives and Indigenous lives carry a 500-year history of their slaughter at the hands of people claiming such carnage as a necessary outcome in order to build a more prosperous nation? So what if the poor get poorer and the wealthy get wealthier? We don't have time for a God who is just a lowly traveler asking for our hospitality, pressing us towards our deepest ethical selves, who calls us to hold back the knife. We don't have time for a God who needs us to set the table of hospitality, who needs us to provide sanctuary and safety for him. We don't have time to believe in a creator of the universe whose creative power rests in his vulnerability and not his might. We need a God who is powerful, who balances the scales, even if that balancing gets a little ugly from time to time. We need a God who demands sacrifice, even if there's a little bloodshed along the way. We need a God who secures our borders and our security. Do we know? Is that the God we need? The kind of God who will demand blood from time to time if it keeps the scales balanced? The kind of God who asks us to kill our Isaacs to prove our loyalty? The kind of God who kills his own son to prove his love for us? The kind of God who would let Martin Luther King die? The kind of God who would let Philando Castile die? The kind of God who leaves immigrants in the desert to die? The kind of God who averts his gaze when we go to war with one another? Is this the God we worship? A God who tells us that the desires and basic needs of some of us don't matter if they get in the way of a chosen people's potential and promise? Martin Luther King wasn't a sacrifice. Philando Castile and Jordan Edwards and Sandra Bland were not sacrifices. Millions of Americans without basic human rights are not sacrifices. Jesus was not a sacrifice, at least not in the way we talk about it. They are human beings who should have never been sacrificed in the first place. They should have never been placed under an empire's violent knife. That's the whole point. That if we think God demands the annihilation of our very selves in order to save us, that if our imaginations are shaped by a need for blood to keep the scales balanced and to keep God's table full, then we will remain a passively violent, shoulder-shrugging, warmongering people. Instead, we hear Jesus say, set a table, pour water, offer welcome, redistribute your resources, your energy, your attention toward one another. Do not leave the waterless without water, your imagination emaciated and incapable of believing that the world doesn't require losers to ensure winners. The prophet Micah, waiting on his own swig of water in the wilderness, says it best. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? God has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, truly, I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. A feast fit for God is the one that you set for God. God is not a bloodthirsty, psychopathic dictator, although we know what those look like, awaiting our violent sacrifices for his gluttonous feast. God is a wayfarer, a traveler, a strange prophet in a stranger land, waiting on you to offer water, to offer respite, to offer your home and your bed and your table. A feast fit for God is the one you set for God. A feast fit for God is the one you set for the world. Enough with sacrifices. Enough with the blood. Enough with the image of God rooted in empire. Set a table instead. Amen.